Hello, welcome. We wanted to see if everyone could hear us. Okay, it looks like everyone can hear us. So thank you all very much for joining. We are delighted today to have Norsk Hydro with us. And we will get things started. We seem to have everyone on the line. Just a friendly reminder before we get started, everyone is on mute during the duration of the call. If you have any questions at any point, we highly encourage you to send them via the chat function. Here you can see how to pose a question, and in the right-hand version. Also, if you have anything you want to send directly to myself, you can use the chat function to the PRI organizing team, and we're happy to address any issues you might have during the webinar. Just a reminder that we will take questions at any point during the webinar, so please send them in at any time. And I will hand things over now to my colleague, Sarah Bostwick from the UN Global Compact, who will be moderating the call. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone from New York. A warm welcome to investors, companies, and experts joining us for today's ESG investor briefing with Norsk Hydro. My name is Sarah Bostwick. Today's investor briefing is part of a joint PRI-UN Global Compact initiative designed to improve company investor communications on ESG information and make sure that sustainability performance is rewarded by financial markets. Norsk Hydro is the fifth UNGC company to host such a call and the second for 2013. Representatives from the company will present the company's ESG value drivers using a framework developed in collaboration with Global Compact lead companies and PRI investors, followed by a 30 minutes of question and answer for participating investors. We highly welcome all participants to submit questions on Norsk Hydro's presentation at any point during the presentation using the question box on the right-hand side of your dashboard. And Danielle has pointed this out earlier. So please don't feel that you need to wait until the end of the presentation. We'll be fielding questions the whole time. Today's speakers from Norsk Hydro are André Fay, who is the head of HSE and CSR, Pal Kildelmo, who is the investor relations officer, and Kirsten Margareth Hovey, the head of viability reporting at Norsk Hydro. Without any further ado, I will now hand it over to our speakers, André, Pal, and Kirsten. The floor is yours, and you'll hear my voice again later on for the Q&A after the presentation.
Yes, good evening or morning, and thank you for joining today's presentation. My name is Pål Kildemo, Investor Relations Officer in Norsk Hydro, and let me start by going through today's agenda. I will start by going through a quick overview of Norsk Hydro, joined by Kirsten M. Hovey, Head of Viability Reporting. André Fay, Head of HSE and CSR, will then go on talking us through some main elements of our strategy: how aluminium is part of the solution, how hydro can reduce our energy consumption, how we reduce our customers' energy consumption, reforestation in Brazil, our license to operate, and a quick touch on renewable energy production. Hydro is a global provider of aluminium and aluminium products, with leading businesses along the value chain, starting with bauxite and alumina, a raw material division, where we have one of the world's largest bauxite mines, Paragominas, with a nameplate capacity of 9.9 million tons, as well as the world's largest alumina refinery, Alunorte. We are Norway's second largest energy producer, with an annual normalized production of 9.5 terawatt hours, which provides renewable energy for our primary metal division. Our primary metal division consists of 2.5 million tons consolidated annual production capacity including 50% ownership of the first quartile smelter, Qatalum in Qatar. We are a leading worldwide supplier of value-added cast-house products, such as extrusion ingots, sheet ingots, and foundry alloys. Our Rolled Products division is an industry leader as a supplier to downstream markets, in particular the building, packaging, lithographic, automotive, and transport sectors. Through our planned joint venture with Sapa, pending regulatory approval, we seek to create a global leader within extruded products, where Hydro will have a 50% ownership stake. All of this adds up to 22,000 employees in 40 countries and serves 40,000 customers in 110 countries. Excluding extruded products, annual revenues in 2012 were around 60 billion NOK. Market cap was 55 billion NOK, which currently is the highest market cap of the pure play aluminium players. Hydro are included on Dow Jones Sustainability Indexes and FTSE for good. Our company has an attractive worldwide position. With the majority of our smelter capacity and all of our hydropower assets in Norway. But Norway is only the third largest country with respect to employees. We also have additional smelting capacity, primarily joint ventures, in Canada, Europe, Australia, the Middle East, and Brazil. The bauxite and alumina division is primarily situated in Brazil, which is also the largest country with respect to hydro employees. Our Rolled Products division is primarily situated in Germany, which is the second largest country with respect to hydro employees. And, pending regulatory approval, we will have a worldwide position through our SAP ownership in the Sapa JV. If you view Hydro's production capacity compared to the rest of the world, excluding China, we are the fourth largest in aluminium equivalents based on 2012 production. This was noteworthy helped by the Vale acquisition of 2011. Over the last years, Hydro has strengthened our asset base. On the one side, through the reduction of smelting capacity, 26% in 2009, as well as ambitious cost improvement programs in our upstream and downstream divisions. In primary metal, we have the $300 program, which aims to reduce costs by $300 per ton of aluminium produced. The Climb 10 program in Rolled Products, which aims to increase returns to 10%, and the From B to A program in bauxite and alumina, which seeks to target savings and improvements of 1 billion NOK by the end of 2015, and with 500 million NOK targeted to be achieved in 2013, this year. On the other side, we have been involved in some quite significant projects at the same time. We are up and running at nameplate capacity and at a very good cash cost at Qatalum. We have integrated Vale's bauxite and alumina assets into the company and are very happy with our long position in bauxite and alumina. And finally, we have agreed with Orkla to combine our extrusion division and most of their Sapa assets into the world-leading extrusion company, Sapa, expecting to deliver 1 billion in synergies on an annual basis, pending regulatory approvals. In addition, Hydro has been in the forefront within R&D and technology, both in the upstream and downstream areas. The result of both internal cost cutting and technology innovation is partly shown here. This slide shows the relative position of the larger players within the aluminium industry. Keep in mind that we have based these slides on reported figures taken from external reports. We acknowledge that there might be some uncertainty, but it gives a clear indication. What this slide shows is EBITDA per ton for Hydro in green and some of our largest peers over the last 2 years. What we see is declining EBITDA margins and poor returns. However, It is very encouraging to see that we are moving in the right direction, and we see effects of our ambitious $300 program. Basically, we are now in the top of the industry with respect to EBITDA margins. The next step is to learn from our fully owned portfolio and the $300 program and implement similar programs also in the JVs.
Hydro's corporate governance is following Norwegian corporate law, as we are based in Norway. The general meeting of shareholders elect two-thirds of the members of the corporate assembly, while one-third is elected by and among the employees in Norway. The corporate assembly elects the board of directors. We have a two-tier board structure. The board of directors are responsible for the overall governance of the company and supervises the daily operations executed by the CEO and the corporate management board. And according to the Norwegian corporate law, the CEO is a formal governing body responsible for the daily operations of the company. The Hydro Way is Hydro's value foundation on which all global directives are based, including Hydro's code of conduct, which is valid to all employees and board members of Hydro. Hydro follows the Norwegian code of practice for corporate governance and have done so since 2005 with a few minor deviations that are listed here on this foil. We have been an early mover within sustainability. We are said to be one of the very first companies in the world to publish an environmental report back in 1989. We have been included in the Dow Jones Sustainability Indexes every year since with the start of the index series in 1999. And we have used the Global Reporting Initiative's guidelines for our reporting since 2003. And following becoming a mining company in 2011, we became a member of the International Council on Mining and Metals. In 2011, I now committed to their 10 principles. And of course, we were one of the founding members of the UN Global Compact back in 2000.
Thank you, Kirsten. Good afternoon or good morning, everybody. My name is André Fay. I'm the head of HSE and CSR and will guide you through the rest of the presentation. Chapter 2 is about aluminium as part of the solution. As this is not an advertisement for metal, I will be short on it. Anyhow, I like to mention some important facts around aluminium, which makes it one of the most, if not the most, sustainable metal known. It has quite some special inherent attributes, such as its lightweight and therefore contributing to energy savings in the user phase, high resistance against corrosion and therefore long-standing times in demanding environments. It is easy to recycle as it just needs 5% of the initial energy used for primary aluminium. It is rather abundant as it is the third most abundant element known. And it is cheap, well, at the moment at least, and unfortunately for us as a company, but good for the consumer and good for the wider use and demand. So much to the metal, so let's move on to Hydro's part in the aluminium story. Based on Hydro's aluminium and metallurgical competence, we are able to put us into a position to meet the global climate and energy challenges. How so? Well, firstly, we can reduce our own emissions in primary production, and I will come back to that with some hard figures. Secondly, we can offer intelligent solutions made of aluminium to help our customers reduce their emissions and become more energy efficient. And thirdly, we can recycle aluminium and therefore saving energy and CO2 emissions, and saving even more every time we recycle it. So we are in a good starting position. Aluminium can actually transform the way we use energy as such. Therefore, and the last, at least for me, this slide here shows best the link between business and sustainability as I understand it. And that sustainability in Hydro is not just a buzzword to be used, but indeed integrated in Hydro's strategy. All the examples on that slide just prove two important facts: how well Hydro's products suit and serve the demand of our customers and the market at large, and how much it is in line with global trends and demands, such as resource efficiency, intelligent products, and the need to recyclability. Just to highlight one example, a car, be it electrically driven or conventionally, which is just 100% kilogram lighter because of the use of aluminium, will save between 9 and 11.5 gram CO2 per each kilometer. The outlook for aluminium is also good. But for whatever you use Hydro's products, it will not only help to reduce the energy consumption of the actual product, but it will also come with a significant less CO2 freight. More than 50% of Hydro's products are proven to contributing to the reduction of the carbon energy. And because aluminium coming from Norway is based on hydropower, which hardly has any CO2 emissions. But also aluminium coming from other production sites of Hydro, for example from Qatalum in Qatar, the world's biggest smelter, has a relatively low CO2 footprint because it is using natural gas. When it comes to health, safety, environment, and corporate social responsibility and compliance, we consider this as part of our license to operate, as we say. But not just that, it is also a strong contributor to our performance. And in addition, it serves as a risk management element and is, of course, a value in itself. The mentioned contribution to Hydro's performance consists of regarding HSE, as it demonstrates that we have our core processes under control and care about our employees and contractors. Regarding corporate social responsibility, because it demonstrates we live up to our responsibility in the communities in which we operate, have our supply chain under control, and take our integrity seriously. By all that, we attract talents and create goodwill wherever we are operating. And finally, regarding compliance, because we, of course, obey the law, and we do it as efficiently as possible. The graph on the right hand here shows our performance in that area. Here the safety performance displayed as one example. We are constantly improving, and even though the safety performance is flattening out lately a bit, it still places Hydro among the very best in the industry. And we are proud of that. Behind these elements are, of course, the code of conduct, long-term targets, and strategies which are aligned with overall business strategies. And we are actually also part, and it is actually also part of the CEO's scorecards. Chapter 3 now is about our energy consumption. And as energy as such is an important factor when producing aluminium, because the production of primary aluminium is highly energy intensive, no doubt about that, we are working constantly on further improvements here. And that is just another reason why sustainability issues in Hydro have to be fully integrated with Hydro's overall strategy. The two graphs here demonstrate just that. What we have already done to reduce our specific energy consumption and, by that, our emissions. And what are our targets going forward with better technology, partly already proven, partly still under development. I think a 75% reduction over a 22-year period is pretty impressive, and we are not at the end yet. We like ambitious stretching targets, and we are proud of our tradition to meet those targets. We are confident also that we meet those targets. And as we look at the regarding the EU benchmark, I guess we can prove that point. Obviously, the development of the technology is the key for us for further improvements. It is essential both for our business success as well as for being efficient and environmentally friendly to utilize scarce resources in the best possible way. For example, Hydro now produces 40% more aluminium per kilowatt hour than we did in 1963. Another example is our location at Årdal in Norway, where we have doubled the amount of aluminium produced per employee since 1990. And now we are preparing the next technological leap. It is a combination of improving energy efficiency, use of process heat, and reduction of greenhouse gases emissions. And by that, even being CO2 capture ready once the technology is mature enough for storage. Our last two successful technology steps just prove that we are able to deliver. The HAL4E and the HAL-C cells marking important achievements in our relentless R&D efforts for an even more efficient aluminium production. We believe that one day we will be able to produce CO2-free aluminium. While Chapter 2 was about what we do internally to improve and getting better, Chapter 3 is about how we help our customers to do the same by using our products. From a sustainability point of view, that might be even more important, as it has opened up tremendous opportunities for both for Hydro as well as for our customers regarding their environmental and business performance. The Powerhouse project is a prime example of how we can help our customers and how we demonstrate at the same time what is really possible today, not in some far distant future, but here and now. The Powerhouse project shows how, by optimizing and combining existing technologies in new ways, an ordinary office building from the 1980s in Norway could produce more energy than it uses. This is the first time a building will be renovated in this way in Norway, and the method can be easily applied to other office buildings. The starting point here is that 40% of the world's energy consumption goes actually into buildings. That is a big number and a huge opportunity for intelligence concepts such as the Powerhouse. In that context, also the legislative side pushes development, at least to some degree. For example, the EU, which demands that by 2020, all new buildings shall be near energy neutral. If you hear the terms by 2020, new buildings, and near energy neutral, you realize that this is not very forward-leaning. The Powerhouse concept on the other side is very forward-leaning, and again, can be done with today's technology. Just to highlight that the Powerhouse concept is a cooperation of various partners, where Hydro provides the material and its competence around the key products such as windows and facades. That is also an important aspect for Hydro. Cooperation is immensely important. The last sentence here, I think, is of particular high importance. The emphasis in that project is on doing it, not planning something for the sometime in the future. So there is no doubt about the success of this project. I'd just like to highlight shortly what energy-positive building really means. It is not just a building which should generate energy, but it should also take into account the production of building materials, the energy used for construction, the operational phase, of course, and the energy for disposal. An energy-positive building is then obviously a building which provides energy above and beyond those criteria. And finally, the Powerhouse project is not about a brand new fancy building somewhere, but a rather ordinary building from the 80s. It is located by the seafront in Sandvika outside of Oslo, Norway, not exactly the most sunny place on Earth. In February 2014, this project will be completed. It will not just be a showcase, but it will be an office building in daily use. And by the way, this building will be Norway's largest solar cell plant at 60 degrees north. Quite impressive. In addition to the building outside Oslo, there's another project currently under planning in Trondheim at 63 degrees north. It would be the world's northernmost energy-positive building. Minimizing our environmental impact is part such as the Code of Conduct. Three out of our six HSE-related long-term targets are aiming at the environment. That just shows the importance that field has for us. Reforestation is one of these targets, and we consider a proper reforestation program as a proof of our credibility. On the slide, you see two pictures, a road cutting through an area for mining and tailing dams. Hydro's bauxite mine is not located in primary rainforest, but an area which has already been locked for other purposes before. Nevertheless, we feel obliged, and we are legally obliged, to reforest the whole area. And we are sensitive to this, similar to all mining companies, because of Brazilian and Norwegian stakeholders, which are very active in that field. And due to Norway's ambitious drive for the protection of rainforests as part of the climate initiative. So we have two targets on the reforestation area. First, to establish a balance between open mines and mines where reforestation has started by 2017. And second, to have a reforestation gap completely closed by 2020. By that, we will also have contributed to a lower overall risk exposure and long-term liability. When it comes to how we do it, we can rely on, of course, internal competence, our share in the company MRN, which operates actually inside the rainforest and where Hydro has a 5% share, as well as through a cooperation with the University of Oslo and partners in Pará, that is a state in Brazil. By that, we are able to apply the best methods for reforestation and aim actually at a net gain in that respect, meaning we leave more behind that than what we have found when we came there. When it comes to corporate social responsibility, we also leave more behind, and we like to see this as our heritage, in particular in the area of education, training, and health. For example, we have a technical school educating, training, and pupils who are potential future employees as well. We are supporting an HIV center in the nearby town. We have initially provided a wastewater treatment plant for the city, which is now operated by the city. And we have a youth center with various activities, courses, and educational program ongoing in the neighborhood where we're operating. And finally, we are Norway's second largest energy producer, all based on hydropower, and we intend to extend our portfolio here as well. This is of utmost importance for us as an integrated aluminium company and a big advantage going forward. Finally, and I think very noteworthy to highlight again these two facts about aluminium, 75% of all aluminium ever produced is still in use, and there's a big demand for additional aluminium. And when recycled, aluminium only requires 5% of the energy initially used for primary aluminium, with no negative effect on the quality of the material. This makes the material as such a very sustainable material and Hydro the right company to work with it. That was the presentation information we intended to give to you. We have hopefully somehow kept the time limit, which was a bit difficult as there's just so much information you can press into those 30 minutes. So we'd like to thank you for your attention and hope that you are still all with us, and we are open now up for questions.
Great, thank you so much. This is Sarah Bostwick again, and now we have some time to answer some questions. We would like to invite participants to write in their questions, again, using the question box in your control panel on the right-hand side of your screen. We will read the questions to the speakers from Hydro in chronological order, prioritizing questions from asset owners, investment managers, and sell-side research analysts. We'll be happy to collect questions from service providers as well, if time allows. Before submitting your questions, please be sure to indicate the name and type of organization that you represent in the text box. So let's start with the first question for Hydro. This comes from Tomas Conde from BBVA, and it's a question for investor relations. How do you measure the interest of your investors in ESG information or issues? What is your strategy around investor relations concerning ESG going forward?
Hello, and thank you for a very good question. We do not have any specific measurement of the interest of the topic you ask. However, we do feel it is a very vital part of the task as investor relations. If you have viewed our annual report, you will see that quite a big section on it focuses on viability, which is to provide the information which we feel is relevant on the topics. And we, of course, are open to answering any questions with regards to this area going forward.
Thank you. Second question is from Yasmin Olsen from Hermes. Since the graph on world demand in your presentation previously ended in 2008, could you comment on more recent developments in demand and the markets in which you see the greatest potential regarding this issue?
Sorry, can you please repeat the question?
Sure. This is regarding the graph on world demand in your presentation. This graph ended in 2008. And the question is, could you comment on more recent developments since 2008 in demand and the markets in which you see the greatest potential?
I don't think we had a graph on demand that ended in 2008, but we had one showing the ton CO2 equivalence per ton aluminium that ended in 2008. Which is the most updated data that have been presented by a EU question for an Austrian analyst.
Okay, thank you. If Yasmin has any follow-up to that question, just go ahead and write it in to us. And we'll move on to the next question from, I apologize if I'm not pronouncing the name correctly, from Erwin Krehelet from Kepler Cheuvreux. The question is, Hydro has a demanding target of lowering 20% versus 2012 in Brazilian upstream operations. Could you please elaborate on the accompanying measures taken to limit potential social conflicts? For example, how unionized are employees or contractors at the Paragominas mean? Have you started negotiations with unions, et cetera?
Our relationship with the unions is very important for us. Hydro has a long-term good relationship to the unions, especially in Norway, and we have brought this approach with us also when going abroad and also outside Europe. One of the first measures we did when we took over the activities in Brazil was to invite our Norwegian union representatives to discuss with the Brazilian union representatives and taking the CEO and even board members into the discussions. We have received very good feedback on that from our union representatives in Brazil. At the same time, they say that there is still a way to go, but they believe that we have started on a very good note.
Thank you. Next question is from Tan Renan from Triodos Bank. Do you also mine or refine other basic materials besides aluminum, for example, any types of conflict minerals?
No, the only mining activities Hydro has is the bauxite mine Paragominas in northern Brazil.
Thank you. Next question is from Jennifer Coulson from BCLMC. Given your international footprint, have you done a water risk assessment to identify any areas of water stress or availability?
Yes, we annually do a water stress analysis based on the World Business Council for Sustainable Development's water mapping tool. And the amount of the percentage of water of our total water consumption in water-stressed areas is about 3%, I believe. And the largest activities we have in water-stressed areas are in Germany and in Italy, in well-regulated areas.
Thank you. Next question is from Marie Navarre from Amundi. Do you evaluate the sustainability contribution of aluminum during the global life cycle in terms of pollution, emissions, recycling, other aspects?
Well, we do, of course, life cycle assessments for our material and the product. However, it is difficult to track at the end where the metal ends. So we do rely on the data we get from associations such as the International Aluminium Institute and the European Aluminium Association, and take those figures as also relevant and valid for us. What we can influence is, of course, what kind of CO2 footprint comes with our product, and there we can be precise, as we have shown in the presentation. Otherwise, we take those association figures.
Thank you. Next question is from Reed Capolino, ESG Analytics. Is the energy generated in an energy positive building all from renewable resources?
The energy generated in an energy positive building or energy neutral building comes from solar energy, from solar cells. It comes from heat pumps, etc. In addition, we need sometimes of the year during the night or the day cycle, we can need to import some electricity, and then it will be from the grid, and it's thus dependent on what electricity it is locally available. But all over the year, these buildings will produce more energy than they are consuming, and the surplus of energy will be exported through the grid.
Thank you. Mike Terrell from SRI Connect is asking, or is stating, we expect to see much greater uptake of CO2 pricing or taxation in coming years. In which of your end markets will higher CO2 prices lead to most substitution away from aluminum towards other materials? And conversely, in which of your end markets will we see most substitution towards aluminum instead of other materials? Please give your answer, he asks, with reference to the revenues that the company receives from each market.
Thank you for an extensive question. I do not think we have the possibility of answering this question on a standing foot and being able to stand behind that answer. So if he would like to leave his contact details, then we would be more than happy to come back with an answer once we have investigated this a bit.
Sure. We will come back to you on that, Mike, with a response after the call. Next question is from Jennifer Coulson from BCIMC. She is wondering if you have looked at Ruggie's guiding principles on business and human rights out of the UN as a framework for human rights impacts.
Yes, of course, we do have. And that was also the reason and starting point where we decided that our activities and ambitions regarding human rights need to be firmed up further. As we are now also a mining company, that has been an important guideline for us in what direction to move on. So we have also got input additional from the Danish Institute of Human Rights, which made an assessment of our activities and procedures and policies in place. And since then, we have, I believe, closed all gaps and improved our processes. So the UN guidelines have been implemented, and we are also have signed up to the voluntary principles of human rights and security recently.
Thank you. The next question is another one from Tan Renan at Triodos Bank. What environmental requirements does Hydro have for its suppliers? Is certification required? Do external audits take place?
At the moment, we are active member of the Aluminium Stewardship Initiative, which is aiming at improved supply chain for the aluminium industry. That is a common effort to focus exactly on these elements playing into this one. Of course, we also have done before that already assessments and mapping of our suppliers, not only regarding environmental aspects, but also CSR relevant aspects such as integrity and anti-corruption. So we believe that through the initiative, there are also other companies are in, not just aluminium companies, and also big other companies like Audi, BMW, that we have a better impact to actually achieve this, that also where we get the material from and the services from are even closer followed up regarding our expectations.
Thank you very much. One more question from Erwin Krehelet from Kepler Cheuvreux. There is a plan to potentially increase the capacity of the bauxite mine in Brazil. What are the environmental challenges associated with this? For example, is there a need to cut forests, to build tailing ponds for red mud storage, etc.? And how do you plan to manage these challenges?
Well, there is a possibility to extend Paragominas. It will not be in an area with virgin rainforest, so it will be continue to be in an area which has been locked before. And of course, with such an extension, there will also be the need for further tailing dams. However, there are various opportunities and possibilities of going forward. So instead of using new areas for tailing dams, it could also be used that open mines, mined areas could be used for tailing dams. When it comes to the red mud deposits, that is then at another place, obviously, at Alunorte, where the aluminium refinery is. And there we apply technology to extract even more water and liquid out of the red mud to be able to minimize the environmental impact in the way that the area used for depositing red mud is limited to what's possible.
Thank you. One question from Chris Anker at the Church of England, an asset owner. I'd be interested to know how the company has been able to capitalize in reputational terms on its reforestation efforts in the Amazon. What advantages have the company experienced in terms of relations with regulators and local government organizations from adopting this kind of approach? And what is importantly stopping other companies from addressing reforestation directly in the way that Hydro is doing?
Well, thank you for that question. That is, it covers several aspects. I try to summarize it. Hydro has a reputation, and we are proud of that reputation, that we are acting in cooperation, in close cooperation with all stakeholders. And as part of this one, also the expectations regarding the reforestation are very high on us. Being a Norwegian company and the Norwegian state as a part stakeholder, a shareholder of our company, and Norway being very interested in investing in the rainforest in Brazil, we feel also an expectation and pressure from that side to do our best in that area. So what we have done then is to have a very close discussion with the authorities, with NGOs in the state of Pará, as well as with the University of Oslo, so to benefit from the best knowledge out there and also to be very clear on the expectations the outer world has towards us. When it comes to other companies, I don't like to speculate what stops them from doing it, but of course it is an effort and cost implications if you do the reforestation as soon as possible, as we like to do it. So there might be the temptation to put that down the road, and that comes then with quite a big environmental liability, which we like not to have.
Well stated. We're going to please, if anybody else has any questions, feel free to type them in the question box. And we're going to address a couple of questions that have come up in our past experience working with investors in other briefings. The first is, how much of the ESG performance data that you've presented here is included in your mainstream investor relations presentations? And this is a related question, are you seeing an increased convergence of these two spheres?
Yeah, well, if we speak about the investor presentation as the one we produce every quarter, then all of the data presented here is not included. However, our annual report has all of this data included. With respect to going forward, we try to satisfy the demand of our investors, and we provide information about the various sustainability indexes, etc., that we are a part of, and we will continue doing that going forward. Do you have anything to add, Tushin?
No, I think that should be valid for our activities here.
Thank you. Another question is, do you foresee growth in commercial projects developed in partnership with others, such as the powerhouse model that you presented? What risks or opportunities does this partnership model for projects present?
Hydro has a long tradition in pursuing partnership models. That is the background for our activities in Qatar, with the 50-50 owned, joint venture Qatalum. It's the background for many other plants around the world. We have a 5% ownership stake in MRN, also bauxite mine, also in Brazil. We have joint venture activities in very many of the bigger plants we are part of. When it comes to commercial activities, we think that it's also a good idea to pursue these opportunities there. As we are addressing the business market and not the end user market, there are somewhat more limited areas where this is relevant. We still believe that the powerhouse is a good example of how it is possible to use adequate competence that is already available and collected across the units. On the automotive side, we have also several examples of where we cooperate with our customers to develop new technology that reduces the energy consumption while at the same time increasing the safety of the vehicles. Some of these issues are initiated by the customers, but many of them are initiated by Hydro. Would you like to add anything? Thank you.
Thank you. One last question, if you could just limit your response to about a minute and a half so that we have time to wrap up, that would be great. Looking at your investment in education in Brazil, How is this a material issue for the company? And in other words, why was this established as a priority? Is it more of a right to operation issue, future workforce, customers, et cetera? If you could comment on that, please.
I think it is a combination of all these factors. It partly comes with an obligation when you get the permit to mine. You have the obligation from the state, from the permit issuer, that you have also to approach and tackle on certain projects. On the other hand, Norsk Hydro, being a company which has a long tradition also in Norway, investing and in encouraging in the community, it was just a natural step then to first take over those activities from the previous owner of our assets there, as well as to fine-tune those to the extent and to the quality we expect. So it is a combination again. It's an obligation. It's a moral obligation. And it's also benefiting us as it creates goodwill and also both future customers and employees.
Thank you for that brief and complete response. I think we need to wrap up now. We're just about out of time. So thank you to everyone for your participation. And a special thank you, of course, to Norsk Hydro for hosting an investor briefing today. After this call, all those who attended will receive a short survey on the content and structure of this briefing by email, and we would really appreciate if you could complete it and return it back to us at your earliest convenience. Your input on the project will be analyzed in order to continue to enhance the briefings as well as the overall initiative from the PRI and UN Global Compact perspective. And in case you are not already aware, we want to be sure that all participants know the PRI and Global Compact lead put out a publication entitled Enhancing Company Investor Communication, Insights from the ESG Investor Briefing Project. The report aims to act as a resource for companies looking to enhance their ESG communications with investors by sharing the experience and lessons learned so far through the ESG Investor Briefing Project. And this publication, if it's of interest, can be found on both the PRI and the Global Compact website. So that's all for today. Thank you all again for your time and participation, and have a wonderful day.